Cheating. Your cheating heart will make you weep.
Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by John Rurink, the boss, Craig Mauger, our house reporter, and John Trescott, our special guest today. Thanks for joining us, John.
My pleasure.
Now that you got your coffee, you're all set.
I'm happy now.
What did you think of our intro music today? It's a little different. This was the director's cut.
I can't help but laugh. You know, it in situations like this that are so sad, really, overall, sometimes a little humor kind of helps people kind of get through and process it. So I thought it was a pretty good choice. I've been listening to talk radio this morning, actually, and some of the bumper music they've been using. None of it's quite this good, but it's kind of been along these same lines. They've done some editing of some Billy Joel songs and some other things. So it's definitely par for the course these days.
Now, for our listeners' benefit, if you haven't heard yet already, Representative Todd Corser has sent out his response to the stories from the past week, started by the Detroit News on his affair with Cindy Gamarad, and then the email that he sent out afterwards in which he tries to defuse a pending story on his affair by saying that he had some gay sex behind a Lansing nightclub, which one pundit said, that's when I knew that was a fake email because we don't have any prominent nightclubs in the city of Lansing. He's basically saying, John, that he was part of a blackmail scheme. He suspects it was his staff in coordination with the Speaker's office. He thinks his office was bugged and that this is all part of a plot to get him and other reform, liberty-minded people out of this town because they don't play ball.
It's always a conspiracy with him, and it's always everybody else's fault. I think it's time for him to step up and take responsibility. If any elected official, state representative, state legislator, anyone is being blackmailed, they contact local law enforcement or they contact state police. I'm unaware that there was any contact at this point. That's a pretty serious charge. I believe it's probably a slanderous charge on his part. And kind of rule number one in politics and PR is if it takes more than a couple sentences to try to defend yourself or explain something, you've already lost.
You mean 27 minutes of audio tape doesn't do it?
27 minutes. I think, you know, what I'm hearing from people today, they're seriously questioning his mental probably lack of stability at this point. I think it's a very bizarre way to respond to something, to lash out at everybody else.
It had a lot of nuanced words in there, didn't it? Like the establishment, like the system. Like it very makes you wonder how much.
Here's a guy who, I mean, really, really messed up. And the fact that he had an affair, look, that happens all the time. Was it wrong? Yes, it was wrong. But using resources, official state, taxpayer-funded resources, is where he crossed the line. If it were just an affair, you know, you deal with that with family and you move on. It's the state resources that you get into and using their offices and things like that. You just can't do that, especially when you've been on the stump and putting out missives, you know, for months, like really against government. You know, the hypocrisy here is, I think, what really catches up with them.
And let's listen to a little bit of this response that he issued this morning.
These staffers that had taken another staffer out of the building and let them know that the, as a statement of fact, that the offices were indeed bugged and wiretapped, which is clearly illegal, and then proceeded to try and scare the staffer into leaving and no longer working in our offices. You have to decide if the actions of these men are without malicious intent. These same men now are producing recordings of private meetings, both at the State House and in my private office in my law firm. Ben was in on it, and so was Keith Allard. I wasn't sure at that point if Josh Klein was in on it. It was only later that we sort of rounded it out and figured out that the three of them were working in unison in regards to the operations to assist in the blackmailing. And to just simply the disparaging of our efforts as state representatives. Many want to know why they were fired. They were fired because they were incompetent and didn't do their jobs, and they didn't have willingness to take care of really the needs of the district and the constituents. And immediately upon their leaving, the offices ran better, and we found numerous incomplete projects that were supposed to go to constituents that these men never completed and delivered. They would show up late, leave early, or not come in at all. I had deliveries to schools, libraries, and ceremonies that they just didn't bother to take care of, leaving a terrible impression about my office in the district. I have staff now that can attest to the failures of these men, what they failed to do, what they had hidden, and the many infractions surrounding their dismissals. I simply come before you and you know, I'm a broken messenger. And, you know, I have the problems in my background, the difficulties in my background like anyone else. And yet, when I look to our founding fathers, they were all flawed, and some deeply so. And yet, they didn't seem to see that as a reason to not serve, and they served. And obviously those were steps that we all benefit from.
Now, John, if you were representing him or he approached you for some advice on how to deal with this, what would you tell him to do?
Resign.
You don't think there's any way he can save his political future?
I don't think there is any redeeming factor in this at all. I heard over the weekend how people were, or at least on Friday afternoon, people were showing up at his office, constituents of his, urging him to resign and just kind of what were you thinking sort of thing. I don't think there's any way to survive this. You know, I think you kind of go back in the history of both Todd Corser and Cindy Gamrat, they don't know how to play well with others. I mean, you cannot come to a legislative body and just be constantly critical and constantly undercutting what's going on. To an extent, yes, you stand up for what you believe in, but to walk out of caucus and start posting things on Facebook, you just don't do those sort of things. And I think when this is all said and done, they're going to find there's probably more things there that they've done that were inappropriate and crossed over what was probably legal. And if they don't resign themselves, I think the House removes them.
That was my question for you. If it goes on 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, does the House have to remove just simply because of the damage this thing is going to do to the reputation of the House?
I wouldn't say that they have to, but I think they'll find it as probably their duty when they find out more. And, you know, any story like this, the initial story typically just scratches the surface, and then there's a lot more there. So I think they'll find out more. I mean, come on. If you thought your office was bugged, then have it swept. I mean, that's just ridiculous. It's crazy talk. I think it says a lot about their mental state that they honestly believe that this is true. And
if they felt isolated before, they're certainly going to feel very isolated and cornered right now.
Well, they're not only isolated, they're completely unfit to hold office. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. They have so crossed the line on things. And again, there is probably more to come out. And do you cut your losses, try to save your family, and move on with a somewhat respectable life? Or do you get completely shamed and probably cross over the line where you could be liable for a criminal prosecution and also a civil prosecution? What Todd Corser is saying in his 27-minute statement, some of it is slanderous. And can be, I'm sure, proven to be untrue. And if that's the case, there's some significant liability there.
Now, do you think Cindy Gamrat falls under this too? Do you think she should resign?
She's certainly complicit in this. Now, I think she's done the appropriate thing by just kind of going quiet and just, you know, let things settle down. At some point, she has to show up. I think it was today or tomorrow. She was having office hours on something. I assume those are canceled. The office hours in the district. But because she is complicit, because she knew everything that went on, because she let him kind of lead the charge and was agreeable or apparently agreeable to everything, she has to go too.
I can't believe that Allegan County would continue to support her very long. I think the Republican Party chair came out and called for her resignation. That's not I don't think that district will put up with that.
I don't think they'll put up with it either. You know, I believe most people believe in redemption, and we all know people make mistakes. That's going to happen. And you give people a second chance. But they so far crossed the line. It wasn't just a personal indiscretion. They likely broke the law. And at that point, that's a whole new ballgame.
What do you think, when you say they likely broke the law, just in terms of using public resources for private matters, do you think that's what actually will end up in getting them kicked out of the House if it goes?
I do. It's misallocation of state resources. You know, telling a staff member to send out this and then take time off, and you know, who knows what they're using state computers for, state phones for, things like that. And you know, you get into situations where you kind of shade the line a little bit, where it could be a close call one way or the other. They've so blown past that line of appropriateness and legality. And I do think, I know Tim Boland's looking into it. Tim's a really solid guy, consummate professional. He'll get to the bottom of this, and we'll likely turn up some things that we didn't know.
Now, if you're the Democrats, do you think now is maybe a good opportunity to think about getting together a recall in thinking that the new state law says if you're going to try and recall somebody, you have to pit that person against somebody. So maybe this could be a Democrat's opportunity to unseat a Republican with a Democrat?
You know, if I'm the Democrats, I just sit back and watch it implode for now. But I have that would be in the back of my mind. I would definitely be getting some candidates ready to run, whether it's a special or whatever it ends up being. But, you know, I don't think they want to get embroiled in this at this point. Just let it play out, because it's about as bad as it can get right now. And, you know, if somebody else, another party gets in, they might screw it up in terms of how this is rolling out. I don't think they want to get in front of this steamroller.
Craig, you know, when this story came out on Thursday, we weren't surprised by the content, because we've been talking about this in the office since May, really, when we first got the tip that something was going on. We got the email. We had heard that it came from Courser himself. And I did approach Courser about it. And it was basically a denial. But what he was trying to say was, in the context, was, I'm not going to respond to this, because if I have to respond to this, then I got to respond to every cockamamie thing that is said about me. And there's a lot of cockamamie things said about me. What did you kind of gather from talking with him? Because we've both been talking with him and Representative Gamrat through this. And there was a lot of, it wasn't really a denial. It was more kind of a, let's kind of change the subject a little bit.
Yeah, he would often hint at things, maybe, that there was more going on in a lot of these situations. He often blamed his staff for not doing what he wanted them to do and not living up to the standards that he set for his office. But, I mean, there was one point that I remember very vividly when all this came out, where he said to me, he was talking about some emails he had sent out about policy, and he said, I don't lie in my emails. If I'm going to lie, I would do it from a fake email account. And it was right around this time this email came out. And when this, you know,
hits that.
So, if I'm going to lie, yeah, I'm going to do it through a fake email.
I don't know if he was referencing this or not, but it sure seems like he was. But, I mean, I think as the audio points to, he was very much into, you know, playing the behind-the-scenes politics of all this. And who knows if this blackmail rumor is true or not. I mean, what do you make of that, John?
Well,
I'm interested.
You know, he's trying to blame it on staff. They weren't serving him well. And if they're black... Okay, if your staff isn't performing and your staff's trying to blackmail you, mm-hmm. would you give him a raise?
Well, then the question I had was, maybe this is hush money. Could it possibly be that he was just trying to keep him happy?
I don't think so. I mean, if that were the case, he would have said it in 27 minutes. Mm. I mean, I think that's trying to get too cute. And if it's the case, it would certainly come out in an investigation. I just don't believe that's the case. I don't think he's smart enough to do that.
You know, for this story to kind of finally come out, Craig, I'm kind of feeling a little bit more relieved, because we've been sitting on this for so long. And the reason is, we just never had any proof. Everybody was talking about, John, this has been the rumor since Mackinac Island, at least. We'd heard about it even before Mackinac right. Island. Everybody's been sitting on it. It's like everybody knew about it, but there was never any proof.
There was a Twitter account about it.
Something
at the Ratty, Team Ratty, yeah. So it was definitely out there. People were talking about it. Many times, where there's smoke, there's fire. This tends to be the case. It just took these staffers, you know, the guts to step
and
up.
It went up.
It went up fast.
it seemed like, I think we had some conversations in the office about this, when those staffers were let go, we wrote a story about them being let go, and it seemed like that was how this was going to come out. Who knew that they had audio of him talking about this?
Yeah,
but it
exactly.
did seem like once he parted ways with his staff that it was likely that they knew some things that maybe they would share with the media at some point.
And, you know, there's also this whole element about his computer and these servers. Now, during his audio, he mentioned that his server was taken. But there was a police report that was filed in Lapeer that we covered on Friday, in which Ben Graham and Josh Klein say that they had to get the police involved. And there's a police report where the police actually went to Courser's mom's house to get what they say was their server, because Courser thought that they had some of his personal documents on it. So there's more layers of even oddness to this whole thing.
You know, when you separate from somebody, if anybody takes personal things, you know, you put it in writing. It's a legal document, legal separation, that anything that's my property, you have to give to me. Things like that, that happens with clients. You know, it happens across the board. That's not unusual. It doesn't appear he's a lawyer. He should know how to do this. He didn't ask, as far as I'm aware, for his material back off of somebody else's server. So I think it adds another layer and raises so many questions. And I think with this kind of question, I mean, one, re-election, he can't survive. So, you know, my opinion, get out of the way now. I mean, you've really disrespected your district, your constituents, and your most importantly, your family in this. And be a man. What I keep going back to is in everything that he's written and said, he invokes his Christianity and God. Then act like a Christian. I mean, go back to your family. Try to preserve what you've had instead of lashing out and blaming everybody else. That is just not a very godlike thing to do.
Did you think he was going to resign, though? I mean, knowing what you knew about him, did you think he was going to take that path? Or?
You know, kind of looking at his personality, he's going to go down fighting till the end. There has to be something so big and so strong, or a charge that will take him down. I don't think that he wants to fight. This is his personality.
Just think about for a minute, though, the way this transpired, how much time these two had to spend. Have had to spend the last 6 months on this issue. It had to be all-consuming, who knows what, and then the twists and the turn. They can't have done any public policy work or real work in the last 3 or 4 months, could they?
Well, I mean, he was missing committee meetings and things like that, and, you know, as the report said, they'd show up to each other's constituent meetings, which is just really, really weird. What was really going on? What kind of hours are they putting in? And again, most legislators work their tails off to try, you know, like constituent services and things back in the district. And there's some puns there that I didn't intend. but, you know, this is, it almost defies words how strange this is and how far over the line they've gone.
What is it with our legislature here where we have these kind of bizarre stories? I mean, we're only 3 years removed from the whole Jace Bolger, Roy Schmidt thing, aren't we?
Well, we're one of the cleaner legislatures in the country, I think, far as scandals. So a lot of other legislatures, you know, they have something go down, and there's, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 people that go down, and some of them do time. So I think overall, and I think this is what's really sad about the impact on the institution. We've got some really good people serving. We've got some good work going on. This is a major distraction and unfortunately solidifies in the public's mind that they're all crazy, they're all doing this, and that's just not the case.
Does this damage the Republican, you know, the House Republican brand going into the election? Because many people in Michigan won't realize the fact that they had been cast out of the caucus, basically.
You know, I think to the extent that it would, I think people... They're voting for their own local legislator and not the party in general. I think most people that vote for the party know that Todd Corser and Cindy Gamrat were quite extreme and really didn't consider themselves Republicans or good Republicans. So, you know, maybe a little bit in the short term, but I think in the long term that fades away.
Well, now that you're here in MERS World Headquarters, and now you get to see the board where we have all 17 of the Republican presidential candidates written on there, and I know that you watched the debate on Thursday, so... Here's all the names, just as a reminder, so you know who all participated in the undercard and the main event. Give me your impressions on who you think won the evening on Thursday.
First, I think the debate overall was fantastic. I think the coverage of it was great and, for the most part, accurate. I would say, you know, overall, the evening was won by Carly Fiorina. And if you went to, and I was there when she spoke to the Michigan Chamber Dinner a couple months ago, and she said her goal was to get to a point where there's enough notice of her where she starts being included in the debates, because then that will bring the money and everything else. I think she far exceeded her goal as far as getting put on the map. So she has to be included in any shortlist from here going forward. I think John Kasich, you know, a guy who barely made the cut in the end, I thought he performed very well. I am partial to governors myself because they're people who have had to run things. They have a record. And I think he's done a fantastic job in Florida. And I'd say probably
Ohio.
Right. I was thinking Florida because I'm going to Marco Rubio next. I thought he showed kind of the star quality, maybe a little bit of show business with some substance. He's just got the it factor that I think people are looking for. And then beyond that, it's kind of a draw at that point. I thought that Rand Paul probably came in near the bottom of the pack, again, just being argumentative. I didn't think Trump performed that well, but obviously some pollsters captured it differently. But they might not have been doing primary voters; it might have been general election voters. I just don't think you can continue to criticize people like this and expect to win. I mean, pretty soon you're going to alienate everybody. And but, you know, overall, I thought the debate was great for the party because it has people paying attention and paying attention to people that they ordinarily wouldn't have at this early stage in the game.
It was the most watched event on cable television that wasn't a sporting event of all time.
That's really amazing, given how early we are. I think there's a pent-up demand. You know, one thing, no matter who the president is, they get towards the end of their second term and people are tired. They want to move on. What's next? There's still a lot of anxiety out there. So I think people are genuinely interested in what's next, who's coming, and who's going to take on Hillary. So the Democrats have this aura of inevitability. There's no excitement over there. So people are gravitating toward the Republican Party to see what's going to happen.
We've got Donald Trump coming into town on Tuesday. Do you think eventually he's going to flame out?
I do. I don't know when it'll be. I just told somebody he's got a little bit of the Jeffrey Figer quality in him, and he just kind of just says whatever comes off the top of his mind. I'd say he's a lot better than Jeffrey Figer at that. But, you know, in the end, what criticism, what insult kind of, you know, takes him down? And I just don't think you can have that kind of attitude and continuously be critical of people and, you know, not have it come back at you at some point.
What do you make of the polling that he's, how well he's doing in the polling so far?
You know, I think people like that he says what's on his mind. He expresses frustration that people are feeling. There are a lot of people who feel the political process is rigged or predetermined, and he's proving that that's not the case. So I think that's why people are gravitating towards him. He's exciting. He's new. He says a lot of interesting things, and I think that's attractive. But in the end, when you get down to really start debating issues and hardcore issues, you know, is he deep enough to really make a go of it with other, and I'll call them politicians, who have been in this game for a long time and really know the issues?
John Truscott from Truscott Rossman Public Relations. Appreciate you being on the podcast today.
Glad to do it.
And for Craig Mauger and John Rurink, I'm Kyle Malin. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the MERS Bundy Podcast. Until next week, take care.